For our last speaker today, I'm happy to introduce Martin Lussier, who is a professor in the Département d'Éducation sociale et publique at Université du Québec à Montréal. His research interests focus on cultural industries, politics, and organizations that give form and make Montreal popular music. In particular, he's interested in the categorization processes in popular music and the development of a live local music sector. He's the author of Les musiques émergentes, Le devenir ensemble, published by Joseph Benet in Quebec, and published in 2011.
Okay, I'll try just to speak louder. Okay, so hi. Today we'd like to talk about the first ideas to come to mind in the context of a new research project that I'm starting about cultural policies in Montreal and local organizations. The comments about the influence of the theories of the creative class proposed by Charles Landry and Richard Florida are now part of the dominant discourse about urban cultural planning. The number of cities that are now branding themselves as being specifically creative or culture-oriented is growing fast. Just a look at the membership of the Creative Cities Network of Canada gives one an idea of the wide array and diversity of cities that are into this paradigm in urban planning. These cities are often paying great attention and working hard to find solutions in order to help their local economy, security, or social fabric in some ways. The main tool they have is regulation, intervening with bylaws or taxes, even though sometimes local entrepreneurs don't like that. Another tool cities have is urban planning, with which they can give orientations to guide the actions on its territory for a certain amount of time. Cultural policies are part of these newer tools that emerged during the last decades in Quebec. Of course, Montreal is part of this tendency and uses its cultural policy to bring all parts of the city to participate in its branding as a cultural metropolis. But during the last decade, there were many urban projects in the city that have been labeled quartier. Just to name a few, Quartier des Spectacles, Quartier International, and the last one, Quartier de l'Innovation, that was announced just a few weeks ago. Interesting to note, all of these quartiers are based on what Florida and followers might call the creative economy. 2 years ago, the City of Montreal launched a large hearing with citizens and stakeholders about a proposition for a new policy on quartier culturel. This tendency could also be traced back to the way tourism is starting to develop around creativity and neighborhoods. The guide Creative Montreal, published this year, is just a perfect example of that. Creativity is presented as something that can find its locus in neighborhoods, neighborhoods that you can tour with the 10 walks the guide is proposing to you.
Yeah, like 10 walks in 10 neighborhoods.
For me, the fact that these quartiers are everywhere should not be taken just as an anecdote or a kind of fashion. To the contrary, it is something very significant in the way the city is conceived and planned. In order to understand these neighborhoods, one needs to look at the genealogy of cultural policy in Quebec and Montreal. In fact, in 1992, the province of Quebec voted its first cultural policy just at the eve of the referendum for the Charlottetown Accord. Not surprisingly, the first part of the cultural policy was dedicated to the orientations to give in order to reinforce collective cultural identity. The second part of the policy was dedicated to the funding of artists, mainly by the creation of the Conseil des Arts et des Lettres du Québec, a governmental organization that has for mission to support and promote artists and arts organizations. The third and most interesting part of the policy was dedicated to the participation of citizens to culture and the arts. This was mainly put in action through a program to create partnerships with the province and municipalities. The reasons for that were that, according to the authors of Quebec's cultural policy, municipalities are the obvious first-line providers in matters of access to culture and facilities. During their years that followed, we saw a boom of municipal cultural policy in Quebec. In 2000, for example, 69 municipalities had voted a cultural policy. When in 2007, 15 years after the 1992 cultural policy, the number of cities with a cultural policy in Quebec was 133, representing almost 75% of the population. Another fact that had an impact on the increasing number of municipal cultural policy has been the merging of many cities in Quebec in 2001. The new cities that were created out of the ashes of the old ones tended to vote cultural policies in order to reinforce citizen attachment. During the last years, statistics show that municipalities are increasing their investment in culture. Their declared expenditures for culture have increased for more than 50% between 2007 and 2011, so in 4 years. Of course, Montreal is part of that. In 2001, 25 smaller cities merged into the new city of Montreal. In order to cope with this very important transformation for the city, the new mayor organized in 2002 a summit where the necessity for a new cultural policy did arise. The next year, the city of Montreal asked Raymond Bachand, who will become the Minister of Finance and Revenue a few years later, to write a report giving the orientations that the new cultural policy should take. And in 2004, the hearing about the project for a cultural policy started, and the final document was voted in 2005 following the guidelines of Raymond Bachand. But in 2005, there were also elections again, and the cultural lobbies elections at the municipal level. And the cultural lobbies were able to put the necessity to have an action plan to the agenda. So to try to bring an action plan to put the cultural policy in action. So in 2007, the action plan was at the center of a very large event called Le Rendez-vous Novembre 2007 Montréal Métropole Culturelle, Montreal Cultural Metropolis. That was a huge, but really a huge event with over 1,300 participants during the 2 days of debate. Quebec's Prime Minister of the time was present, Minister of Canadian Heritage was present, Quebec's Minister of Culture, Montreal Trade Board, and so on and so forth. So many people, many stakeholders of culture in Montreal was present at this event. The main outcome of this event was the action plan that was aiming at enhancing Montreal as a cultural metropolis and following five guidelines. First, improving access to culture. Second, investing in the arts and culture. Third, enhancing the cultural quality of the living environment. Fourth, promoting Montreal's reputation in Quebec, Canada, and abroad. And finally, providing Montreal with sufficient means for remaining a cultural metropolis. The action plan was very clear about one specific project, Le Quartier des Spectacles, that was described possibly as the new flagship for Montreal, a key to the city's new competitive identity in the global economy. I'm quoting a journalist here. This urban project is now described by many people as the main realization that we remind of this action plan. The Quartier des Spectacles was framed as a project situated in a very precise area, but in order to help all the city, a kind of citywide intervention. But as Simon Bro, one of the most important persons for the creation of the action plan, in fact, he runs the steering committee that wrote it. So as Simon Bro says, culture is not just about one neighborhood. Now that it has finished a display or show or shop window, Montreal needs to develop other places. In 2007, the core of the debates was the downtown area and festivals. But now, a few years later, Montreal is looking for interventions that are less spectacular. This brings us to the cultural quarters. Following the Montreal summit in 2002, the cities defined top priority programs for Montreal's future, One of them was to develop cultural poles in the city to enhance culture and innovation. Since there was no precise idea of what a cultural pole might be, the city decided to ask for a study that would clarify the definition. And so, in 2005, the study was ready, and the city began to ask the different boroughs their comments about the cultural pole concept. So, what does that mean for you? And the answers were multiple. Many officials were thinking about one building in their territory, so saying, like, this building is a cultural pole. Or others were thinking about their entire territory as being a cultural pole. So there was like some very interesting discussions about that. But since the development of the Quartier des Spectacles was well underway, it became the example of what could be a cultural pole. So the city was saying, well, here is an example of what could be a cultural pole. So now what does that mean for you? And so, some of its dimensions became part of the new concept of the cultural quarters. For example, the city wrote in its 2011 document that was accompanying the hearings about cultural quarters that the Quartier des Spectacles paved the way to a new form of urban development in Montreal based on an existing cultural function that could be nurtured and developed. While the Cultural Quarters project operates on a different scale, it can apply the same approach deployed by the Quartier des Spectacles if it is attuned to local circumstances. In contrast with a cultural pole, a cultural quarter is not merely defined by artistic creation, production, and dissemination activities. I'm still quoting. It also presents and incorporates heritage, architectural, environmental, natural, commercial, ethnic, cultural, and scientific elements, while involving a broad cross-section of local partners. Since 2005, we have accordingly evolved from a cultural venue used for creation, production, and distribution into a multifaceted, urban cultural space. And this is the end of the quote. And so, the vocabulary changed in 2009, and a cultural quarter was now the new way to think about cultural policy in Montreal. That brings us to the second Rendezvous Montréal Métropole Culturelle, Cultural Metropolis, that, well, happened in November, in last November, where more than 900 attendees were talking about the state of culture in Montreal and the conclusions or orientations the action plan should take for the last 5 years of its lifetime, because it was thought as being a 10-year plan. The first theme to be discussed was called Local Montreal, where the issue of the neighborhoods and their particular value was raised. After the panel, one city councilor stated that, and I'm quote, these cultural quarters that we talked about today are the soul and the very intimacy of the cultural metropolis, whom would not be without them. A few weeks after, one of the major Montreal newspaper stated that one of the biggest priority of the new mayor, yes, we have a new mayor again, should be to develop these cultural quarters. But what about music in all of this? While music was at the center of the discussions about cultural policy in 2005 and 2007, 2005, it was at the, well, Arcade Fire was everywhere, so everybody was talking about Arcade Fire as a good example. What was its place in the debates here in 2012 and 2013? In order to understand what is going on with music in cultural neighborhoods, I would like to come back to the comments of Anaïd Kasabian about her idea of the existence of a ubiquitous mode of listening. I don't want to argue for or against it, but to think with it. I would propose that music in this context was made a ubiquitous work. By this, I mean something that is made alongside or simultaneously with other activities. For Kasabian, the reasons why ubiquitous listening is possible was that music is everywhere, in every room, every shop or boutique, in your car and in your phone, in your daily activities and when you wait in line at the bank. In this sense, listening to music is a constant and secondary activity that comes with something else. The second reason is that it relies on a kind of sourcelessness. That is, it comes from everywhere and nowhere at the same time. We can recognize the source in terms of the place where the sounds come from, or in terms of the genre or the artist that worked to produce it. Kasabian stated that ubiquitous music erases its production as much as possible, posing instead as a quality of the environment, a kind of wallpaper for our daily lives. So thinking of music as ubiquitous work that is everywhere might help to understand the omnipresence of music in the debates about cultural quarters. Music is everywhere, as examples or models that one might follow in order to create a good project in its neighborhood, for example. Not only it is shown as example, but it is also everywhere in the multimedia presentation of the cultural quarters policy project. Images of musicians playing in parks and streets fill the screen and fill all the documents that you can see. Music work is presented in all of these occasions as a kind of tool for other goals. Music is useful because it helps reach these goals, always as a secondary activity. For example, in one multimedia presentation, an attendee at a public concert in a park stated that, and I'm quoting, in the neighborhood, we have issues of homeless persons, prostitution, and drug consumption. It doesn't solve these issues, but we can appropriate these spaces in a different way. One of the ways in which music is everywhere as a secondary activity is in its conception as a leisure activity. From the city point of view, music is part of its object of intervention, partly because it is a recreation that is happening outside of the workplace. In fact, in its document, the city is describing cultural forms like music as something between home and the workplace. But in the debates, music was presented as a leisure that is for work, that is, a useful activity in developing some important quality to enhance the worker's ability. Music work is everywhere, but as a leisure. The other way I'm thinking of music as a ubiquitous work is through the idea that it is sourcelessness. By this, I want to point out the fact that in all these debates, and even if music seems to be everywhere, the music activity, all the work that is needed to have a song or a concert in a park, is still invisible. In fact, conditions of production of culture are barely part of the debates. In this sense, music work is taking place without calling conscious attention to itself as an activity in itself. Last week, for example, I was participating to a café citoyen, kind of discussions about cultural quarters' future policy, where the theme of the place of the artists in the neighborhoods were supposed to be discussed. One of the participants stressed that, well, and I'm quoting this guy, "We talk a lot about culture, but we don't talk anymore about artists. We talk about citizens, but we put the artists aside." And he was continuing saying that the promotion of the artist is important, but also the promotion of its work is important. This last quotation can also bring us to the fact that music is conceived as a part of the quality of the living environment. This idea put the citizen at the center of the cultural quarter, music being part of its associated milieu, that is, of its associated set of meaningful elements on which one could intervene to act on a population, a kind of ecosystem. If the citizen is at the center of this, it means that music is part of its cadre de vie, what they call the cadre de vie, a way for the city to intervene on its population's well-being. As background music, it involves also a highly political use of culture, of course, for economic development, but much more importantly, for social cohesion. Like Culture Montréal, the organization responsible for the action plan, Simon Bro, the guy that I told you that he was the at the head of the steering committee, is the president of Culture Montréal. So like Culture Montréal, the organization responsible for the action plan, like the organization has stated, the cultural quarters are neighborhoods with less criminality. So, music is part of the living environment of the cultural quarter, an environment that enhances security and cohesion. And so, it is they are a lot into trying to build like many communities together with music and with culture. As we have a conclusion, the expression used during the hearings of the cultural quarters was that the new model for intervention by the city was urban acupuncture. Maybe it is the next step forward after the cultural metropolis and the cultural quarters. I don't have a clear idea of what it means, but it turns out that it does mark a different point of view on cultural planning that, than the creative city and creative class paradigm. Where you used to have a citywide conception of creativity and intervention, you may find, maybe not a new, but a different understanding of what a cultural development may look like. In fact, the creative class paradigm inspired the idea of cultural poles that have been transformed in depth into what is now called les quartiers culturels. As one person told me about the cultural quarters, and I'm quoting this girl, Julie, in the action plan, at the beginning, we were talking more about cultural poles. We were associating this to an idea of economic development. And slowly, the concept evolved to become something that includes issues of citizenship. So now we talk about neighborhoods. A kind of switch from an economic cultural pulse to a romantic cultural quarter or a citizen cultural quarter where labor is hidden behind the wallpaper. Thank you.
Thank you. That was really interesting. As somebody who lives in Montreal, I moved to Montreal in 2007, so I guess I've sort of been there to experience some of this change. I'm just wondering, one of the things you didn't really get into was language, one of the special fault lines of Quebec and Montreal. And in some of my own work, in some of my ethnographic work with some Montreal musicians and how many of the music scenes are so divided along language lines. Some of them aren't, but some of them certainly are. And how that language division plays into this, you know, the discussion of creative cities in Montreal, these cultural poles, and how that gets perhaps reflected differently in different boroughs depending upon language and language division.
An issue during the 2012 rendezvous November 2012, there was an issue about English-speaking people in Montreal because this cultural policy is really French-oriented. So it is from people that speak French and that wants to enhance French language in Montreal, for example. And so there was discussions about the fact that, well, okay, there is no music nowhere, but there's also no Anglophones nowhere in this. And there was one person present at the that was representing like the Anglo service. I don't know how to say that, but he was there. And the thing that he was saying was that, well, some of these neighborhoods have, in their profound essence, kind of English DNA. And so we have to enhance this English DNA in some way, proposing some, I don't know, some kind of action or animations just to help these population. But at the same time, it is also some kind of not an issue for the cultural planners because they were more into trying to bring everybody together in a kind of happy moment of, yes, we are all into culture and that's fun, instead of like stressing these kind of issues that are very important in Montreal.
Well, especially like, you know, Arcade Fire is a sort of, you know, yeah, celebration of Montreal, and, you know, which does have both English and French members in the band, but certainly sing in English. And, you know, internationally, you know, as very much as an Anglophone band, how that in a way reflects or relates terms of one of some work I'm doing in terms of sort of the free improv scene in Montreal, and how a lot of that sort of the music actuelle was very much, at least traditionally, very much francophone, and very much seen, you know, very much understood as sort of very sovereignist leaning, and yet because they didn't sing, because they weren't singing in French, because they had no, it was all instrumental, they were actually not recognized by the, a lot of the cultural institutions, because as sort of a francophone music, because it had no words, and therefore they were kind of not given a lot of funding compared to, say, a folk singer singing French, and how that, some of their, how they sort of felt somewhat, didn't feel included as part of sort of the cultural assets of Montreal, simply because they weren't singing, and how that, that kind of left them out of some cultural funding.
Well, yes, there's plenty of discussions about, like, for example, there's one part of the action plan that was enhancing French language in Montreal, trying to bring people to speak French, for example, in Montreal. But at the same time, many intervention by, for example, Simon Brault was saying that, well, we have to just look at the diversity that is existing in Montreal, and just work with this diversity in itself, and try to show how Montreal is cool internationally, using these kind of issues about language.
Weaver.
Thank you. My question is the genre, and I'm wondering in the discussions, in the policy discussions that you've participated in, or just in your observations of the festival, how that plays in. But what I'm thinking of in particular is, you know, you pointed out the sort of ubiquitous deficit of the kind of wallpaper quality of things in our lives, that, you know, certain genres have that more so. And in particular, I'm thinking of the Fault Line, thinking of another one between classical and popular music, and the association of creativity with composition, with something that's new, newly produced, you know, as opposed to something that's, you know, from the past and doesn't sort of, where certain conceptions of creativity are not immediately visible or part of our, we don't know if it's a classical music, but definitely being creative, because they would think of like a new kind of popular music as being, you know, where it's fresh and creative in that kind of sense.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, I mean, there would be other examples as well, but it was just obvious to me how those, what in terms of the music that you see being privileged or championed,
There was two particular genre that was important in the discussions. Like I was saying, music was everywhere and nowhere at the same time. So they were not discussing about genre specifically, but the examples they were giving were all about world music and hip hop. And so all the examples were about how we can deal with, how we can use hip hop to work with young people in the neighborhood, for example. Or to the contrary, how we can use world music to kind of build this social cohesion of all the community in the neighborhoods. For example, in some neighborhoods where there are like thousands of different ethnicities. So these are the two main, the two most often, genre that I saw in these debates. The other is around the quartier des spectacles, where you have like the particular thing in this is that they often show like classical music as going into the park and being like the way you can build community around classical music and bringing some kind of democratization of culture on all the territory. So this is the kind of argument that we can see in this debate about culture in neighborhoods.
The opening of the new concert hall.
This is everywhere. The pictures of the new concert halls, concert hall is everywhere in the cultural quarters document.
All right, one last one, and then take a break. No, you go ahead.
Je me suis demandé, en fait, tout au long de ta présentation, c'est quoi le mot culture? Tu as bien, je pense, dit à travers les lignes qu'il y a vraiment, non seulement il y a une espèce de mouvement, hein, quelque chose de vraiment plus artistique qui peut aider l'économie, quelque chose qui peut aider vraiment la citoyenneté, puis les habitudes de vie, ça. Est-ce que eux-mêmes, ces acteurs-là, définissent la culture, c'est comme des paragraphes qui disent
que
c'est quoi la culture pour
vous? Yes, so what about culture?
In her question. Anything? yes, culture is defined in the diverse documents distributed by the city. And at first, and even the city knows that they have changed their mind through the 10 years that the cultural policy has been discussed. And at first, they were into culture as, like, you know, cultural industries. But now, and they're stating that in the document. And now they are more into, like, you know, the UNESCO kind of definition of culture, so more broad anthropological definition of culture. And they are thinking cultural quarters in these terms, saying like culture is more than cultural industries. But in doing so, you forget totally cultural industries. They're just saying, well, now it's just about the anthropological definition of culture. And so we just have culture as leisure activity. And
that can be everything.
Yeah, exactly. That can be everything. But at the same time, it's not everything for them.
No.
It's just like culture in the street. Like their argument is, you walk. They try to be sure that when you walk one street corner from your house, you will find art somewhere.
Have you seen those federal government ads for culture days?
Yeah.
There's a great article in the International Journal of Culture Policy by Kate Oakley called "The Disappearing Arts." And it's about the way in which this understanding of the creative industries, not the cultural industries anymore, but the creative industries, has actually almost lost any notion of the traditional arts. And some of my students read that article and think she's being some kind of elitist, but I don't think she is, because she's addressing exactly the point you raised. It's like, what the hell are we talking about?
All right, I think we probably would enjoy having some coffee and perhaps continuing the conversation, so thank you, Matt.
Thank you.